Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and in my defense, I should not be fired because I was playing games before the show. Tommy sitting over there. What's up, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
We should have started like 10 minutes ago. Why did we not? Because I was trying desperately to finish The Outer Worlds. That's what I was doing. And that's why we're now running late. So I did not finish The Outer Worlds. I am so close. Like, I'm right at the end.
That's a fine reason to be late for a gaming podcast, I think.
Yes, yes. I think in some cases they would call that dedication.
Yeah. I was late last week playing Dream, so now we've just got a theme going on.
Which, by the way, holy crap, that game's great.
Is it?
It's really good.
Yeah.
So is another one that we played this week. We got a lot to talk to you people about.
I'll go through the show notes. Go by GamingUncensored.com because I don't know what we're going to get to, and honestly, there's not much. We've got games to talk about, and so that's going to be the focus of a lot of today's show. But assuming we get to show notes stuff, we've got Star Wars rumors, another Star Wars game potentially coming. Don't know anything more than that, but hey, we could speculate. Harry Potter rumors, that game is back. We've got release dates for some big games. We've got, this is maybe the thing I want to make sure we get to the most. We've got a new TV show in the works based on a video game that I think might actually be pretty phenomenal. So we'll make sure we squeeze that one in there. We'll see what else we get to GamingUncensored.com to check out the show notes and see what we didn't get to.
I really think that the best part of today's show is what we're about to talk about, and that's all the crap that we've been playing.
Yes.
And we've been playing a lot of stuff. You and I are kind of on a bender. I don't know what that's called in gaming, but I'm going to call it a bender.
Yeah.
If that is equivalent to being alcoholic, sign us up! All I'm saying is, can we get some bourbon while we play?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, where should we start?
That is a good question. So, one thing is going to take up a bunch of time. So, let's save that and cover any other things that we want to hit on. So, you've seen let me ask you this. This is a good place to start. You've seen the end of the Dreams thing at this point with the
art.
Art, yeah. Art's whatever, Dream or whatever it's called. I would just love your thoughts on that, finishing that thing up and what you thought.
Okay, so first, this one means more to us than it will other people because it's music related. And I gotta tell you, the music is what sold me on that deal. They did a really nice job production wise. It's very well put together. It's very, very, very interesting. And I found myself at the end of it saying, you could really make a game out of this.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't really appreciate the dragon junk. I didn't really appreciate the platforming stuff all over, although some of it was pretty good. What I really appreciated was the in-world, like, musician type stuff.
Yeah.
I dug that a lot.
Yeah, it could have been it's a showcase of like all the different things that you can create and do in Dreams, and so they very intentionally made it a lot of different things. There's some like little side scrolling elements in there. There's all kinds of different gameplay styles, all that kind of stuff. And so that was the whole idea of it, as just kind of a tech demo, a really fancy tech demo. But I agree. I think the thing that I saw the most promise for was almost you could even do a kind of noir point and click almost kind of adventure game out of that, in that same kind of vein, around like a little jazz musician thing with solving mysteries and that kind of stuff. That would be a blast and take away all the kind of weird, you know, psychedelic dream stuff or whatever that was a part of it, and create a really compelling, interesting game just from that. And the brilliant thing is you can do that in Dreams. I've played around with it a little bit more, just playing a couple of other experiences, and it's much like anything that's creator and creation based, you gotta weed through a lot of stuff to find stuff that's compelling. So I fired up a handful of experiences, dreams and dreams, whatever they're gonna call them, most of which have not captivated me, right? It's definitely not something where every single one of them I go, this is brilliant. I did fire up one last night. I had the little girl sitting on my lap for half an hour and said, hey, let's play some games, and it's either Red Dead or Dreams right now, and I'm not playing Red Dead with her. So
no.
Said, hey, let's fire up Dreams, and found this, like, I think it's just a like a proof of concept thing of this little like action RPG setup that's these kids. It has a very Stranger Things kind of vibe to it, like a little band of kids trying to figure out mystery in their town kind of thing. And I'm just like, there's so much brilliant stuff that can happen here. I just don't know that any of it's ever going to be complete, you know? Like, I don't know that people are actually going to finish things in this world when you're so reliant on just people who either have jobs or go to school or whatever to be putting out this content and stuff.
It
gives people this outlet, but you're going to weed through a lot of incomplete, dead concepts in order to find those gems every now and then.
I will tell you now that there will be one guy, there will be a notch type guy that makes a game out of this and probably ends up making a ton of money.
Yeah.
Because they get bought by Media Molecule. And that's always the way it works with this. There's one or two geniuses out there and the rest is crap.
Yeah.
It's like we talked about last week. There are a lot of people trying to recreate games that already exist. And that's great, but, you know, that game already exists. So there's that. But I really do feel like there's probably going to be a couple of guys that make a little money on this deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's a great showcase for talent. And even if it's, you know, not, hey, you made this game in Dreams that, you know, now Sony or Media Molecule or whoever like wants to hire you, that it's just a, like, you could send it to other developers and say, hey, this is like what I did in my spare time with no resources or whatever. Like, can I help make your game, you know, whatever software company is interested. I think it's brilliant. I love the concept of it. It's great. Like we've said, obviously being Media Molecule, it's very similar to Little Big Planet in that creative space kind of thing, except Little Big Planet had an aesthetic, had a kind of world that you were building into. And this thing is like a blank canvas nearly. Like the other game that I mentioned, that action RPG kind of thing, is a completely different visual style than Arch Dream was. As it's very vibrant colors, it's not polygons, it's very smooth and round character models, and like it feels like a completely different thing, all within the same engine, all user created. It's a brilliant place to have that outlet. Whether or not for somebody like me who doesn't want to create, that I ever find tons of really compelling stuff to play, I don't know. But it's going to bring me back because it's something, again, that I can pick up for half an hour. I can play with some experiences. The little girl can sit on my lap while I'm doing that. I can give her a controller, so I have my Stadia controller, which I'm not using for anything because I don't have Stadia anymore because there's nothing compelling on it, but I still have the controller from it. And so I hand her the Stadia controller. I have the PlayStation controllers. We're both playing a game. Like, we're super happy. Yeah, it's a wonderful piece of software for that thing, which is enough for me at this point. That's great.
Well, and one thing that we haven't talked about that might actually get you building stuff in it is I did a little research on YouTube, and there are people actually building music in this thing.
Yeah.
It's that good.
Yeah.
And we talk about it a little bit, but let's be real honest and say that's what you do for a living.
Yeah.
That's your thing. That's your skill.
Yes.
You have a 2-year-old in your house that already has already sat in front of a mixing board and knows how to wear headphones and the whole ball of wax, which, by the way, was the cutest thing I've ever seen life.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how cute that was.
It's freaking unbelievable.
Oh,
that
thing. Made me so happy.
It's not my kid, and I'm looking at the picture going, that's my girl!
Right.
That's her! Yeah! I mean, for crying out loud. Like, that's what you do. So if you were going to build anything, it would be production.
Yeah, that's fair. And at some point, I will get in and play around with that. I have, I went through some of the building tutorial stuff, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll get into this. Maybe I want to build my little, like, home space or whatever they call it, you know, and it just didn't captivate me. It's just not my thing. And like, I have in my head, like, how cool it would be, especially with like playing through our stream again, knowing that like everything that's in there can be created. There's one space where it's kind of in a little studio. There's a drum kit set up and some instruments laying around, and you interact with stuff. And I'm like, this is so freaking cool. I'd love to build just a little room in here, that's like a little virtual studio. That would be super cool. But then I actually start like going through this is how you have to move stuff around and place it in space and rotate. I'm like, I don't have the patience for this. I need some money to pay somebody who's good at that to design me a space that I could think is cool. But it's not my thing. I can't sit down and do that.
I'm glad that we agree on how that works, because that's my mindset on a lot of things, a lot of this creative stuff. And I get people around me that scowl at me. They go, you can do that. And I'm like, yeah, but I could pay somebody that would do so much better.
Yes.
And that's honestly the way I feel about web design and a whole bunch of other stuff, is that, I can do it, but there's 8 zillion people out there that can do it better than me.
Yes.
So, I feel the same way.
I get that outlet in One World. I get that outlet in music production, and I love that, and I enjoy that, and that's as much of it as I have bandwidth for, I think. You know, like, I don't have any more bandwidth for that kind of stuff. As much as, again, I would love to. And in my head, like, I get excited about the prospect of it and thinking about it. And even, like, you know, like, I'm looking at dreams going, we could build, like, Gaming Uncensored in this world and have, like, cool little, like, episodic Gaming Uncensored games. But no, no, not going to do it,
well,
you know.
And see, that's the thing. I think we both have ideas, and Evie always talks to me about this in her 3D environment. She's like, you know, you guys could be in there, you guys could be doing shows in there, and we love to do it, but we want somebody else to build it.
Yeah.
Like, we have ideas, we know exactly what we want, we just don't want to build it.
Yeah. That's
so
100% correct. So Dreams is cool. And if you're a creative type, you're probably going to really, really dig it. Even not being the creator type, we dig it. It's cool. So,
yeah.
So that's Dreams. Let me ask you about what else you've been playing. I've got one more thing I want to mention before we get to the big thing, big game that we're going to talk about for probably the rest of the time.
Well, I have been playing a ton of The Outer Worlds. As I said at the beginning of the show, I am right at the very, very end. I'm on Tartarus. I just had the big, long discussion with the lady in charge. And she's not happy with me because I've screwed up her whole system. And, yeah, I'm right at the end. And I was telling you before we started, it's one of those things that sucks to be right at the end and be 2 skill points short of what you need to make something work. Like, the person in me that is going nuts wants to, like, go back to the save that it creates right before you start the end game and respec, because you can do that in The Outer Worlds. I've done the entire game, and I've not used the respec once. But I don't think I'm going to, but I got that little voice in my brain that says, you could do that, and this would be a whole lot easier. So I've been playing a ton of The Outer Worlds, and it's great. I love it. Those guys at Obsidian are going to make a lot of money. And they may not have made a ton on The Outer Worlds, but I'll tell you, The Outer Worlds 2 is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really good. They did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super jealous of you getting to spend as much time in that game as you had, because I really, really would love to.
And what I've spent, I
love, and at some point I hope to get back to it.
Let's just be honest. You shouldn't be jealous, because I'm taking time to do that from other things that I need to be doing. And so it's not like I got all this spare time.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm going to do this and screw everything else.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're at. It's great. It's very, we've talked about it before, it's very Fallout. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to play next, because Fallout 4 is still on my machine. And as you know, I hate Fallout 4.
Definitely don't go back to it now after playing The Outer Worlds.
This is making me, like, think about it. Like, can I make this work? Like, you know, because yeah. I want more of this.
Absolutely. That's 100% fair. And I say it as somebody who really enjoyed Fallout 4. I liked Fallout 4 a lot. But it's, yeah, it's definitely not Obsidian Fallout, and it feels that way, and so.
I despise Fallout 4, and I'm trying to figure out, after playing this, do I have the mental ability to go back and play Fallout 4, because I want more of this type of RPG.
Yeah.
What I'm most likely going to do is start playing Disco Elysium, which Sam on the Facebook page is playing.
Yeah.
And I'm scared to death of that thing.
Yeah.
Because apparently it's the ultimate RPG. I have 90 hours in The Outer Worlds, and I think you could very easily double or triple that in Disco Elysium, which I have way too many games to play to be doing that, but yeah. I'm thinking about it.
That's
so we'll see.
That's very true. We'll get into the one here in just a second, but that one comes out in less than a month, and that's going to own me us at that point. So yeah, I'm trying to budget time right now to be like, can I get done with Red Dead, a game that's been out for a year and a half before April 4th or whatever the date is? And yeah, I don't know that I can, but that's my attempt now.
I shouldn't even be talking about Disco Elysium, because when April 4th gets here, you forget it. It's all over. Done. Like, I feel bad for Duff. I feel bad for everybody else that's bought me games. I will get to them eventually, I swear. But on April 4th, it's all over.
Yep.
Like, we haven't talked about this. I know you have a semester to finish. But when that happens, I'm looking at my finances going, okay, how much could I theoretically pay Tommy to be here for like a week or a week and a half? Because this is a in the same room experience.
Yeah.
And if we had a few days, we could literally make up for all of the Patreon content that we owe you guys.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, we get an extra week. It's April 10th. I just looked up the release date. And so, of course, that is for Final Fantasy VII Remake. Let me mention just really quickly before we dive into that. I have been playing one other remake, just started yesterday because it just released, an actual release. It's been around for years. But Black Mesa is in official release now. You can go
awesome!
Get it, like, not in early access. And so I did pick that up, and I've played a nice little bit of that, which is super fun. It's, again, if you love Half-Life, it's that remake that feels like old still. It's not like super sexy modern graphics. It's better graphics than the original. But it's a wonderful balance of like looking better in a way that like makes it more palatable for kind of 2020 sensibilities while still feeling classic. It has a very classic kind of play feel to it and look to it. It's not super over the top great lighting effects or character models or anything like that, but it looks perfectly fine, and it's Half-Life, and it's super cool. And so I highly recommend that. For me, it was just, I haven't played Half-Life in I don't know how long, well over a decade, two decades at this point, whatever it's been. It's been a long, long time since I played the original Half-Life. And so just firing it up and playing with it for a little bit, I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't.
It just feels good.
Yeah. And I don't remember a bit of it, you know, like I remember kind of big picture stuff, but like just the nuts and bolts of it. I'm like, oh yeah, this is what this is, you know, like, and it's like just so shocking to jump into a game that like doesn't hold your hand, that like the very beginning of the game, like playing as Gordon, you're like having to go and like find where you're going. You have to go get your hazmat suit or whatever. And like, it doesn't tell you where that is. There's no like indicator on the map or anything like that. A waypoint that's showing you just gotta like go find it. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is how games used to be, you know, like that you just had to like figure stuff out. I had to like go into the locker room and look for the locker that said Freeman on it, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of making me work a bit. So I really enjoyed just that little piece of it that just like, this is what games used to be like. And it was, again, just kind of nostalgic and fun, which is exactly what Final Fantasy VII is in a lot of ways, too, that we're going to jump into here in just a little bit. But it's a very good time to be a gamer coming up on your 40s, because we're getting all these nostalgia trips, and it's fantastic.
Okay, so I have played Black Mesa for years. I did not expect you to go this way. So now I'm all jazzed because you're playing Black Mesa. I played Black Mesa for years. It used to be a Half-Life 2 mod.
Right.
That's how they started. And I've played that a lot. And I've played it here and there on, like, free weekends and stuff. I almost got through the entire mod when it was a mod. And I just haven't picked it up because I'm like, I'm going to wait till it releases. And then it goes on sale.
Yeah.
Because I've spent entirely too much money on Half-Life, but it is really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Sam was doing his yearly playthrough of Half-Life 2 the other day and was talking about never really playing the original Half-Life, which... I love Half-Life 2, but the fact that there's people out there that have never played the original Half-Life makes me cringe.
Yeah.
Because it's what started it all. Black Mesa is fantastic. They've done an amazing job. It looks great. It sounds great. The sound, for me, is the seller in Half-Life.
Yeah.
It just sounds good. It's a lot of fun. It's 20 hours that we don't have.
Yes.
but it's a blast.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to get through all of Black Mesa, but even just getting in the world and getting to experience it, I've really enjoyed. So all that being said, let's talk about the other remake, the one that is going to completely own us, of course, as Final Fantasy VII. If you don't know, there is a Final Fantasy VII demo available to you on PlayStation Network right now. Again, this is one of those things that's so wonderfully nostalgic, because when we were younger, Final Fantasy demos were a thing. Like, when a Final Fantasy game was about to come out, you would get that demo included with another game, and I remember going and renting games just to get the disc to play the Final Fantasy VII demo of games I didn't care about at all. But like, that was a thing, and in this day and age, demos aren't a big thing anymore. But
Metal
for Final
Gear
Fantasy,
had a demo.
Do what?
Metal Gear had a demo. I mean, lots of things had demos.
It was a standard thing because there wasn't YouTube. Like, you could go like pull up YouTube and like watch video game trailers to get hyped about a game. The way you got people hyped about it is you let them play it a little bit. And it seems like, you know, for me being nostalgic, like that seems like something of a lost art. I'm a person that still looks for those demos from time to time. Obviously, not as many of them as there used to be, but I'll pull up on PlayStation Network the demos every once in a while just to see what's there, and I'll play one here or there. But when we were younger, like that was the way you access a game before it comes out. So all that said, it just feels so good to play Final Fantasy VII Remake in a demo form. It's not going to carry over any of your progress. You're gonna have to start over all this stuff. I don't care. It was really nice to get to experience that world with a controller in my hand, to feel what the gameplay is like, what the combat is like specifically, because that's basically the bulk of what you do in the demo. It doesn't have much of the RPG elements to it. You don't do any kind of leveling. You do level up during the demo, but you don't actually do any kind of leveling in it. You don't do any gear inventory, that kind of stuff with it. It is really just about experiencing navigation and combat. But those are the biggest questions I had, and so it's nice to have that that experience now before the game actually comes out. So
okay, so if you don't like Final Fantasy, you might as well scrap the rest of the show. Because we got a lot to talk about. So if you hate Final Fantasy, we'll see you next week.
Yes.
By the way, we didn't mention second week in a row,
right?
Folks. Hello!
Look at that. Crazy stuff.
But here we go. So a couple of things I want to open with on this. First, it is... You boot it up and you start, and the thing that I noticed right off, again, you said it, we grew up with this. This is the one that owned us back in the day, right? And part of the reason it owned us was because it was extraordinarily well made. Like, when we booted it up back in the day, we got chills. And I was watching the opening of the demo at 11 o'clock at night. I think I actually texted you while I was watching it, forgetting that you have a 2-year-old and sleep is valuable. But at that point, I didn't care. I was watching the opening and watching it pan out where you see the whole city, trying not to be like a geek in Star Wars going, woo! because that's how I felt at 11 o'clock. Like, my whole body just, it's just chills. It's spectacular.
Yeah.
The way it looks. Now, we can argue about the character actors and all of that, but it looks unbelievable.
Yeah. I would agree that that's the first big takeaway. And we've seen video of it. It's not like we didn't know what to expect with it. We've seen plenty of examples of what it's going to look
we've
like.
We've seen video, but I think we were both like, yeah, it's not. I don't know if it can look that good. I don't know.
There's something about actually having your hands on a controller and getting that feedback of, like, when I push an analog stick, that cloud moves in that direction, while those visuals still look that good, that kind of goes, okay, this is real, you know? Like, this isn't, they haven't been just, like, giving us rendered videos that look artificially good. Like, it really just looks that good. And it is Midgar. Like, it just, like, all of a sudden I was in that world again. And again, like playing Black Mesa as a game I haven't played in many, many, many years. I haven't played Final Fantasy VII in many, many years. Semi more recently than Half-Life, but not significantly. And so there's something that's immediately familiar about it, but specifically for Final Fantasy VII Remake, that's also very, very new about it too. Like, that it's a very different feel with how you're interacting with the characters. I don't even know how to explain it well, as such a huge fan of this game from when I was 15 years old or whatever, to have that experience again 20 years later and to go, wow, this just makes me feel so good in a way that, like, most games don't do. And that's a like, we love video games, we play video games all the time, but there's something magical that those certain titles that you know and love do that other games don't do. And so the fact that it was able to elicit that out of me from kind of the first moment I start walking around in that world speaks a lot to what they've done with this remake. And so,
well, okay, look, I think I can quantify it for you. I talk a lot on this show about locking ourselves in a room and playing games.
Sure.
Like, that's the thing, is this is the first game in a long time where I'm literally looking at stuff going, okay, how can we get together and spend more than two very, very, very fast days trying to get through this? Going to take like a week, and this is how I want to do it. And it's all because of this title. That's how we played it when we were growing up. We didn't know each other, but when you play this game, you sit in a room and you pass the controller around.
Yep.
For 80 hours or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And this has that same feel.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So all that being said, let's talk about some of the actual details of the gameplay, because that's by far what was my biggest question about it. And so I'll just start by saying, kind of 30,000 foot view before we get into the specifics. I really enjoyed it. Like, I really think that the combat system is fun, and I was kind of dreading that. And that's the standard combat system. I'm also going to say that the classic combat system just kind of sucks. I was disappointed in that because we talked about it a ton leading up to it, and so we don't have to rehash that by any means. But I was really hoping for the classic mode being kind of more turn-based strategic like you did in the original Final Fantasy VII. It's not that. It just automatically fights for you until your bar fills up and then lets you do the commands. And so you can either control your characters until your bar fills up and then you can issue commands, or you can just let the computer control the character for you until the bar fills up and enter commands. That's the difference between the standard mode and the classic mode. And so, like, it's just hands off, and you're just watching the screen until you issue commands. And so I'd rather actually be actively doing something than just letting it play itself. But the actively doing something is actually pretty fun and works well. It feels like a modern Final Fantasy VII or Final Fantasy game, which I was worried about because I haven't loved the modern Final Fantasy games nearly as much as the older Final Fantasy games. But it works, and because it's Final Fantasy VII, because it's Cloud and Barrett that you're playing as in the demo, like it allows me to forgive some of that that gameplay that isn't my favorite. Coming in blind with characters I don't know, like the gameplay probably wouldn't interest me nearly as much. But because it's characters in a world I'm familiar with, I go, okay, yeah, like I'm getting to hack and slash with a Buster Sword, and hacking and slashing consists of just hitting the square button for the most part. You can change Cloud's stance, which is kind of a cool little strategic thing that you kind of do in the normal combat, or you can switch to playing as Barrett, and so then you get the range stuff, which is cool too, and so there's a little bit of strategy and that kind of stuff with it. But even if it's just mostly hack and slash with the Buster Sword, that's pretty cool in and of itself. Like, because it's Cloud and because it's the Buster Sword, like, I can kind of forgive it just being this hack and slash thing until you start issuing commands and doing limit breaks and magic and that kind of stuff.
You were talking about hand-holding earlier. And part of the reason I'm really frustrated about the way they did the classic mode is because they were like, yeah, here's classic mode, but we really don't want you to play it that way. So we're going to make it lame so you really want to play it the other way. Yeah. Like, how much work would it have actually taken to do an actual turn-based system and do it right? Because if they had done it right, I would play classic all day long. I am not, and I have no reflexes, right? But I'm not going to sit there and watch the system do the slashing for me until we get the ATB bar filled up. I'm not doing that. That's dumb. And whoever thought that was a reasonable idea probably needs to go get another job. I mean, for crying out loud, guys, if you're going to offer a classic system, offer a freaking classic system. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I understand they want people to play the other way, and so they're moving people toward that. But if that's what you want, why are you offering the other?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. That they want people to play the game as they designed it, and they didn't design it to play like the original game. And so there was this kind of sense of, oh, yeah, a lot of people are going to want to see some version of this. And so we'll put in something in here that's called Classic. We'll kind of slap that name on it. But again, it doesn't feel any more like the original than the standard combat mode does. So maybe that's the biggest takeaway with that, is that it's not in any way reminiscent of the original. Neither combat mode is reminiscent of the original. They're both drastically different than what the original combat is. And that's fine. Again, I'm saying that as somebody who really enjoyed how the combat worked and looking forward to playing more of it. But yeah, if you're trying to extend an olive branch to people that kind of want that nostalgic combat, you did it only in name, literally in name only, because the actual mode itself just isn't
that. I mean, look, and this is where I'm going to get frustrated, because the only time that I will actively use that is if I get stuck.
Sure.
Like, and I think this is one thing that they might have done okay. I think you told me that if you put it in classic mode and then you take control, it lets you take over, right?
Yes.
So I can start in classic mode and take over in certain sections, and in other sections, theoretically, just let it go.
That's correct.
Which that will save me with no reflexes from getting totally jammed in an area, which would frustrate me, because it's Final Fantasy VII. It wasn't hard. It was about strategy.
Yeah. But let's be real honest about Final Fantasy VII, the original game. We've talked about this before on the show. It wasn't hard. That's not a game I died a lot in. There was some strategy to it, you know, and especially early on in the game, like some of those boss fights are challenging. And if you did, you know, if you like go fight the weapons or whatever, like those are incredibly challenging fights. And the kind of gap between the difficulty levels of kind of the standard game and the kind of secret end game kind of stuff in Final Fantasy VII was just massive. It was just this huge chasm. But for this just standard stuff in the game, like by the end of the game, you've got a million Phoenix downs, you've got a million potions. You're fine. Like it wasn't about that kind of challenge. Whereas I think this one is going to be a little bit more about that challenge, because in the boss fight that you play in the demo, like I almost died a handful of times and I had to use a crap ton of potions to get through it. And like I was kind of like, wow, this is making me work, you know, like I'm having to effort to get through this in a good way, in a way that I'm like, I'm going to have to be strategic. Like I'm not just like hacking and slashing. I'm not just issuing commands, but now I'm going to have to start thinking about where do I physically position Cloud? Where do I physically position Barret? Who do I need to be in control of at any given moment? Which one of their abilities is going to be most useful at this time? Like on and on, like even I didn't realize this early on, you know, just playing the game, you kind of start figuring this stuff out. But like Cloud's abilities, that when the ATB bar fills up, she can trigger the, I don't remember what they're called, the Braver and the whatever the other one, Focus Hit or whatever they're called. Like, you have to be close to the enemy. Like, you can waste those if you're just too far away. Like, Cloud isn't automatically going to get in range to make those work. And so I did those a couple of times where he just, like, swings into the air. And nothing happened because I wasn't close enough to the enemy for him to actually do anything. And I'm like, oh, good to know. Like, I need to be kind of strategic of where I'm at on the screen in order to make this thing work. And those kind of things really got me excited about it. And again, by the end of the demo, I was just wanting more of that. It's very active. It's not, again, the original Final Fantasy VII. You can kind of get into a boss fight. You can sit there for a little bit. You can think about what you want to do. You can navigate menus. And you can still do that when you're doing your commands, but like it doesn't stop time. It just slows it way down. And so it still gives you this kind of urgency that you need to make a decision, because like the kind of out of focus background is still moving. Like the world is still kind of happening. And so it always has this kind of sense of urgency that I think is actually pretty cool. That makes it kind of fun to play.
It will be cool unless you are really in a space where you need to take a minute.
Yes.
Like, you brought up the weapons earlier. I don't want to play the weapons in this title at all. I don't want to see them. I don't want them to be there.
Yeah.
Because they destroyed me in the original game. I mean, destroying me. Like, I had 120 hours in, I had all the crap you're talking about. Then you walk up on them, and they're like, yeah, bye. I don't even want to try to fight a weapon in this title because of the way it's set up. I can't even see a good way to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get mowed down if they're in there. So I don't see that. So all of that stuff's great until they try and put something like a weapon in there where you really do need the time. Where you're really standing there going, okay, what do I need to do here to stay alive?
Yeah.
Because some of those fights actually were that way. And somebody that makes an appearance in the demo, the Sephiroth fight might be that way.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, that's gonna be rough. So I'm happy about it, but as a cripple with no reflexes, I'm really curious how it's gonna play out.
Yeah. That's definitely fair. So that all said, let's just talk a little bit about the kind of other elements that we did get to experience. Like I said, we didn't get to experience gear and leveling up and skills and that kind of stuff, really, which I'm excited for all that when the time comes. But the other thing that it's very modern Final Fantasy in to me is that it is now fully voiced, which is obviously new for Final Fantasy VII. It is also that way over the top kind of, I say modern Final Fantasy, but even lots of kind of Japanese RPGs and Japanese games in general.
It's anime.
Yes.
It's very anime.
It has that feel to it where, like, when you're running around, this is the thing that just stands out to me so obviously. Just when you're running around, like, the efforting noises of Cloud, the, like, little, ooh, and ee, and oh, like, there's just so many of them, and they're so loud. And I'm like, I get it. Like, you're running. Like, you don't have to be, like, panting the whole time or whatever. Like, it's just so over the top. And that's an aesthetic thing that I think I'll get used to pretty quickly because it wasn't bothering me a ton in the demo anyway. But I just don't love it. It's not subtle. It's very much not subtle. And so that's weird to me, as opposed to, like, playing, you know, old school RPGs where you get, like, the little teardrop or the little, like, thundercloud above their head or whatever for those emotional cues. Now we've got all this, like, vocalization cues that have just, come across to me as ultimately cheesy. And I don't know that it's cheesy in a bad way. I think it's kind of cheesy in a campy way, but that's, like, it's going to be a little campy. Like, you can't take it too seriously.
Well, and when I was watching this, my immediate thought was, I really kind of like Cloud's voice actor. I can't say that about everybody else, but he kind of fit.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I'm going to feel that way after 50 hours.
Right.
Or if I'm just going to hate them all.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Cloud did well, which was weird to me because, again, Cloud specifically of any of them was the hardest one for me to kind of get a voice in my head for. The Barrett one, it's so stereotyped in a lot of, like, terrible ways that it's just awkward. Often, I'm not even going to say just a little bit of the time, like, often it's just awkward and just cringy. And I'm sure that you're going to get used to it as you play it, but man, there's going to be a lot of cringe in the game. I've already seen the video for the cross-dressing section of the game. There's going to be a lot of cringe in the game. And some of it's going to be awesome and funny and a good time. Some of it's going to be legit just cringe that I'm like, I don't want to do that again.
Well, I can't wait until somebody gets a hold of some tech or something and can redo Barrett as Mr. T, because that's what I really want. Just to hear Barrett say, "I've been a fool."
He's not far off. It's pretty over the top. All that said, man, I'm looking forward to this thing. We were anyway. I mean, it's no surprise. Anybody who's been listening to the show for any amount of time knows we were going to geek out over this. But actually having played a bit of it now, it just reinforces all of that and just says, this is going to be fun. Even if, and like, let's not forget, this is a really important bit of context here. This isn't the whole game. This is going to end before we're ready for it to end. And we don't know when we're getting more of it. They have not announced that at this point. It could be years before we get to play any more of this, that this is episode one, whatever they're calling it. That still worries me, and I don't know where they're going to end it. But I'm gonna love this part of it, and if this is all we get of it for the near future, we're still gonna geek out over it. We may not geek out over the next episode as much, but this first one is gonna absolutely own us.
And one thing that we haven't thought about or talked about, if it doesn't sell well, there may not be more. Like, they may not finish it.
Yeah.
Because they spent how many years on this?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't sell well, I could see somebody saying, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think this first one's going to be fine. I think just the hype and the nerds out there like us that have been waiting for this for so long, I think the initial release is going to be fine. The question is, how many more are they planning to do, and how well does the second and third one do to make the fourth or the fifth one again? I don't know how long they're going for this, but to make those viable, that's a bigger question. I don't have a good answer for it. We'll just have to see what happens. But the first taste of it is already good. It's going to be good, and so pumped about that.
So, since you brought up the fourth or fifth one, those are the ones that concern me, because by the time we get to that point, that section of the game is extremely open world.
Yes.
Okay, you have the airship, you have the weapons, you have all that little stuff. You have the Kokobo races. You have all of that stuff. And one thing this first section is very clear about, as much as we love it, is that it's on rails and you ain't going nowhere they don't want you to go.
Yes.
So I am very concerned about if we get to the fourth or fifth episode or whatever, are they going to be able to do the open world? Because the open world doesn't actually happen until the very end of the game.
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, cool, you got all this stuff, now you can go play. And I don't know how they're going to do that with this.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that was a point I was wanting to bring up and I'd forgot about. It is very much on rails, this demo is, and that makes sense for a demo, but that, I mean, it's the first part of the game.
The first part of the original game
exactly
was on rails.
That's what I was going to say. The much bigger portion of the first part of the original game is on rails. Like, the lot of Final Fantasy VII was very controlled. And a couple of options of, like, you could explore kind of little side areas here and there to find little secrets, but it wasn't open world by any means. And so I wouldn't anticipate much, if any, of this first release being open world. I really do hope, and this is asking a lot, and I'm not saying it's likely, but I do hope there is some just getting to explore Midgar, because we know this whole game just takes place in Midgar. Like, I really hope there's just some, like, you can just go wander around a little bit and see the world. I don't think there's going to be much of that, and that's fine. Again, staying true to the original, there wouldn't be much of that. To put it into context, I just Googled it because I was curious. The Midgar portion of the original Final Fantasy VII took 5 or 6 hours to get through of a 40-hour gameplay if you're rushing through it, right? And so at that point, 5 or 6 hours kind of extrapolated into this first version. There's a ton of game that isn't going to be covered in this first one. And so 5 or 6 episodes may be optimistic at that. Of course, I don't think they're going to put in the same level of fleshing it out that they are in this Midgar section. I think there's a reason that Midgar is getting this much focus. But it's a lot of game that we're not going to have this time, including that open world, getting to explore, getting in the airship, which was such a fun part of Final Fantasy VII. Like, none of that stuff's going to be happening right now. That's stuff we've got in the future. Now, 2020 is a much better time in gaming to do open world than 1997 was, or whenever Final Fantasy VII came out. And so you could do a much more compelling open world today, but man, that's a lot of work. I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what they do next with it.
I think it can be done, because I look at something like Resident Evil 2 that we still haven't played, that we have to play.
Yes. The fact that remake of 3 is coming too.
The fact that neither one of us has played that is just ridiculous. Yeah. Like, we should be fired at this point. So I think it can be done, because there were people that put the Resident Evil 2 remake up for Game of the Year. I mean, it's that good.
Yeah.
So it can be done. They can do it well. The question is it going to be worth it for them to do it well?
Yeah.
And are we as gamers willing to pay for it?
Yes.
Because we're talking about $60 per episode. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a hard sell. So, all that being said, we're almost out of time, and we knew that that's what we were going to get to. I do want to bring up just a few other things. Again, go by the show notes, gamingandcensor.com. There's some interesting stuff there, including a pretty decent chunk of gameplay from Half-Life Alyx. So, we talked about Black Mesa a little bit. Half-Life is obviously in the news recently because of Half-Life Alyx coming. And so, if you want to see more how it's going to play or just get nostalgic about it with more modern graphics, it's really fun to watch. But the biggest thing is it shows a few different ways of navigating, which is always a big question with virtual reality. And so it does both the kind of standard teleport thing. It has a few different ways it approaches that, but it also has a continuous move that you can just use an analog stick to walk around the world, which is by far the way that if you have any propensity to motion sickness at all, that's going to make you puke. But if you've got a pretty solid stomach, that may be the most fun way to navigate that world. So anyway, it's also got a ton of other things of how the world interacts, and it's super cool, of just puzzle solving, of combat, of like taking cover. It's going to set a whole new bar on what virtual reality games are. Like, it's going to just, yeah, it's going to be a whole new world going forward. So many games will be influenced from this in the virtual reality space, which I think is super cool. So,
and that's what made Valve.
Yeah.
I mean, look. We talk about Valve has been Valve so long, we forget the fact that Half-Life would put them on the map.
Yeah.
Like, what they did in Half-Life gave them everything else.
You buy games on Steam because Half-Life exists.
Yes.
Full stop. Like, yeah, it is what made Valve. Before Portal, there was Half-Life, and that's...
And they're about to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from this point, everybody else in VR, if they do it correctly, is going to be chasing Valve.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I'm completely convinced of that after seeing the gameplay. No doubt in my mind. So, one other thing I just want to bring up really quickly. I mentioned that we would get to this, so we'll get to it. The Last of Us is getting an HBO series. And of any game out there that could be really, really well translated into a really great HBO show, I think that's a good one. And then to add to that, Craig Mazin, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his last name, but the showrunner for the show Chernobyl, just such a critical success. And then Neil Druckmann, who is the guy behind The Last of Us, are the creative forces behind it. And so hopefully, again, I'm always hesitant with any kind of video game adaptation to movie or TV or whatever. Hopefully, The Last of Us as a TV show is going to just kill it. It has so much potential and could be so freaking cool. I hope it's phenomenal.
Two things. It has potential to be phenomenal because, let's face it, it's The Walking Dead 2.0.
Yes.
Secondly, is it bad that I'm glad it's not a Netflix original series and instead is being done by HBO?
Yeah. I 100% concur with you there. I think the best thing it has going for it is that it's an HBO show. I really enjoyed The Witcher on Netflix. But like, it is a Netflix show in the same way. Like, I really like the Daredevil and some of the other Marvel stuff. Jessica Jones is really good. Iron Fist was not as great, but it all felt very Netflix. Like, those Netflix shows just kind of have a feel to them. HBO shows do as well, but the HBO show feel is 100 times better.
There's a Netflix formula. And I'm one thing I did not mention at the beginning of the show, I'm currently watching Daredevil season 2.
Nice.
Because I've decided I'm on this kick that I'm going to watch all the Marvel stuff in the order in which you're supposed to watch it. So you get all the little Easter eggs and all the different shows and all that. And it's good. It's good, but it's not stellar.
Yes.
Like, it's not like the first four seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I would say to HBO. Let's make this good, and when you're out of good stuff, stop. Because the first four seasons of Game of Thrones was fantastic. From that point, it just kind of got a little weird.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think the second season of Daredevil is the best season of any of those Marvel shows. I love the second season of Daredevil. But it's not stellar. You're right. It's really good. It's not stellar. It's not the first season of Westworld on HBO. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not, apparently, Watchmen, which is one of those shows that they're not doing another season of. Like, they said, hey, we killed it on this season. We're going to leave it there. And so, yeah, I hear you 100%. The most hope I have on that show just killing it is that it's going to be an HBO show. So, a few release dates for you. Death Stranding officially coming to PC, and that's a big deal. We'll be here.
Crap, man, we still gotta play that.
I know, it's ridiculous. June 2nd is the release date for that on Steam and the Epic Games Store. Ghost of Tsushima is going to be on PlayStation 4 on June 26th. All of a sudden, June is turning into a big month for big releases of these games. One that's already out, one that we didn't have any clue when it was going to be here, but now they're going to be here in June. And so that may be good, because there's a good chance we won't be doing E3 at nearly the level, because we were talking before we fired up the mics. It's not official yet. There's a really good chance that E3 is not happening this year. We'll have digital events and that kind of stuff, which will be fun, and we'll be here to talk about all that stuff. But E3 with 50,000 people at the LA Coliseum isn't looking super likely.
Yeah. And can I say, if we got games in June, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
But like, if you give me those titles in June, y'all can go on the go to Cancun, bro. Just go away.
Yeah.
Let's play games.
Or everybody just do like a Nintendo Direct type thing. And we'll talk about that, and then we'll play games. So yeah.
Yes.
No harm, no foul. And honestly, I put this on Twitter. But I'll mention it here just really quickly too. If that's what happens this year, I think it's E3's just done, because I think everybody's going to figure out, oh, hey, this works. This gets us basically the same amount of hype. It's a whole lot cheaper. It's a whole lot easier. Why are we trying to do this big stage show thing? It's just not necessary anymore. The same way we just talked about demos and everything else. 2020 is just a different era of games. And so if E3 doesn't happen in the LA, and even if it does, it's been on the way out for a while, but this could be that final nail in the coffin of E3. And honestly, I don't know that that's a terrible thing.
I think that I'm not worried about the death of E3 so much as it's the Amazon effect, right? Like, I was going through town the other day, and Mom was looking out the window and like, oh, Pier 1's closing. And, you know, I'm a 40-year-old man. I don't care about Pier 1. But why is Pier 1 closing? Because Amazon is killing everything. And I love streaming events. I love them. But, and I'm okay with E3 not being around. But when we get to the point where there's no conferences anywhere and no place to go, it's all streaming on the internet, that's bad.
Yeah.
And that's where I don't want to get to. That's where we're getting with Amazon. As much as I love Amazon and Bezos, my brother has this theory that Bezos is going to be the first Bond supervillain. You know, and he's just going to rain in terror from some island in the Pacific somewhere. And the more I look at it, he might be right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's my only thing is like, okay, maybe E3 needs to go, but I hope we don't lose PAX or name another one. I get Tokyo Game Show, Gamescom. Like, we gotta have at least some place to go.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I feel like.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, but it's going to look different going forward.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Again, that's kind of where we're at. Releases, not a ton, except for Black Mesa officially being, again, it's been a game that's existed as a mod and then as a standalone in early access for years and years at this point. But it's officially out 1.0 at this point. So go check that out. Outside of that, not a lot going on right now as far as game releases. There's a bunch of random stuff on Steam, and so as always, go check out those at the show notes, see if there's anything that excites you there. But otherwise, go buy the show notes just because we miss a lot of stuff. And got to say really quickly, because we got out of order here, thanks to the Patreon guys, Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, and Sam. We appreciate you all a ton, and thanks for your support and more content coming soon.
Yes. Sam, buddy, you're my friend. I like you a lot. But how much more are you going to rub into my face that you have a 2080 Ti? Like, how much more is that going to happen, man? Because I'm getting a little angry here.
I really enjoy living vicariously through Sam on Facebook, of just watching him post, like, random reflection videos. It's great. It's fantastic.
It is. It's like I must have that.
Yes.
Like I'm looking at my computer going, okay, it's time for a rebuild. We gotta build.
Yep.
Again, I gotta have a graphics card. And I gotta have an 8-core CPU. Like, that's awesome. So yeah, buddy, I'm trying real hard not to hate your guts. I'm just saying.
It's fair. 100% fair. So.
Which, by the way, there's a lot of stuff going on the Facebook page. Tommy has totally become a Twitter person. Lots of stuff going on the Twitter. I'm seeing stuff on the Twitter that's like, I have to go to the Twitter to make sure of what we said. We being Tommy, because somebody asked me about it or something, and I go, we said what?
That's fair.
So yeah, that's... That's been kind of interesting. Following Gaming Uncensored on Twitter has been a whole lot of fun.
Yep.
Because it's that whole we thing, and what did we say? We said it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Definitely go and check that out. We do have a voicemail line that theoretically works.
Yep, we've got a voicemail waiting from Brigham there, so we will get that soon. It's at 509-GAME-210.
Lots and lots of different things to do with us. As we said early in the show, we are 3 weeks out from Final Fantasy VII, and about April 4th, you're probably not going to hear from us or see us. I'm not even sure we'll be considered alive after April 4th, because we may honestly be locked in a room doing nothing but that.
That's fair.
So be prepared for that.
Yes.
That being said, you should see lots of streaming content. So if you want to know if we're still breathing, yeah, probably the best place to look is the Gaming Uncensored YouTube, because that way you know what we're playing. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, for right now, I'm Jamie, that's Tommy, and for one more week, we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.